Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
And welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton. With me tonight is Leo Sun. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Had a couple days. Well, not a couple days. It feels like it's been a couple days. It's only been one day since the end of the Lynx season, which we'll talk about a little bit. But it's been interesting. Excited for the Wolves, but then again, on the women's side of it, a little bit down.
Yeah. The end of the Lynx season, still trying to grapple with it, but I guess happy that the Wolves are back for a distraction from that. But I think that's where we'll start with. We'll start with the Lynx and kind of head to media day today. But the Lynx season basically imploded since you and I last did a pod. We had Jim on a week ago on Monday, and they were up 1-0 against Phoenix. They were up 20 points in the third quarter of game two, and it all came crashing down. Basically in the span of six quarters, their season went from title favorites to more or less over. They just completely, utterly blew game two. We're up 20, let go of the rope, and were never able to claw it back. They had just multiple, not just blowing a 20-point lead, but then they had a 5-point lead with under a minute left and couldn't inbound the ball on a 5-second call, and gave up an open three to tie the game. And then game three, they were as sloppy as they were in the second quarter, pretty much, or they were as sloppy in game three as they were in the second half of game two. They end up blowing the game. Fee gets hurt. They put up a fight in game four, but ultimately they choked that game away too. All three games they end up losing the series were winnable. It fell over once Fee got hurt, but I don't know. It was an abrupt ending. You get these 5-game series, and so if it was a 7-game series like in the NBA, you'd still have time, although, like I said, Fee getting hurt complicates that. But it was an abrupt ending that I don't think anyone has seen coming, and I don't have an explanation for it, because what we saw from them was not who they were all season. So I don't know how to square that with what we saw. What do you got with the end of the Lynx?
As the late great Michael Scott, well, I shouldn't say late. The great Michael Scott once said, "How to turn tables." Because as you said, after our last episode with Jim, exactly, or just a week and a day ago, eight days ago, the Lynx had just come back from, I believe, is a 14-point second half deficit to come back and win. And then they go on and pay the favor forward to the Mercury three times. And with three times in a row, even with Fee out the last game, it's hard to say that, oh, it was just luck. It was like a bad game. It was like, no, I mean, it happened three times in a row. And like you said, it's really upsetting to me because they're sad for me because you and I have watched the Lynx all season, especially this team. They've been super resilient. If anything, they've been nothing but clutch in the fourth quarter, like they showed against, you know, the first round against Valkyries and then in game one against Mercury. And then they do this. And so many people who are only tuning into the Lynx now are like, well, this team, they're just not clutch. This is not who they, this is who they are. They deserve to lose. Like, no, that's not what they were. And it just sucks that some people are going to go home thinking that. And so it's really sad. I mean, I think if I had to sum up last season where the Lynx lost in game five against the Liberty, I would have summed it up in super mad. Like, that's my two words, super mad, because it felt like it was stolen. It felt like they were always the betting. They were not the betting favorites the whole time. they were underdogs. They had a great overachieving season. They pushed all the way to game five and they had it, and it was just stolen away from them. So I was mad after 2024. This year, 2025, my two words would be super sad, because they were, for, you know, lack of better words, kind of front running all season. They were running laps around the league. They were killing everyone. Fee got hurt. They still played well without her. She came back. Didn't get MVP. That's fine. You know, swept the first round, the only team, you know, this year to sweep in the first round. And then they were up 1-0, should have been 2-0, and instead they fall apart. And if anything, it's just sad, because we have no idea what this team is going to look like next year. I think it's something like 80 to 90% of the W are all unrestricted free agents or restricted free agents of some sort because of the way the collective bargaining agreement is set up. We don't know if that's going to be resolved. It still has no end in sight right now. So is a lockout possible? Hopefully not, but it could be. There's going to be expansion draft with Toronto and Portland getting two teams. So there's going to be players leaving there. And then the Lynx also have a really high draft pick that they're getting from the Chicago Sky as well too, which could also be in play whether it's traded or whether it's used. Things just going to look way different. The only two players on contract, Brian, for the Lynx next season is Dorca Juhas, who sat out the season, and Anna Kosu, who was our first-round rookie. That she actually played a little bit in Game 4, didn't play a lot, but those are the only two, those kind of rookie-scale contracts still on the books, and there's no one else, and that's very much how other teams look like as well, too. So it's just sad, because you know that this team will not be back in this exact iteration, or very unlikely it will be, so it's just a really sad ending.
Yeah, it's tough. It really, you mentioned both this postseason and the last postseason. It just feels like both of them, they could or should have won either title. It's one of those things where it's, you're going to look back and be like, how did that team was so awesome? How did they not win either championship? And obviously the league and the officiating is a big storyline. I'm not especially sure that the officiating was the reason they lost, and I don't even think that's necessarily why Cheryl was so adamant about bringing that up and talking about it, and she ended up getting suspended for it. Obviously, the finals were far more, I thought, officiated, that played a role in the actual outcome of the game, It's just tough that you had this great team. Certainly this year, you just destroyed everyone, basically until the start of August, even when Fee was hurt and she comes back and you're still winning, and I don't know how to explain it, because like you mentioned, a lot of people on social media will give you the shortcomings of this team, and like, it's fair, like they didn't rebound well, or this player wasn't good enough, and that's fair. And my comeback is always like, then why didn't that show up in the regular season? Why were none of these issues bigger that caused them to not, they were dominant. There, in the history of both men's and women's basketball, like, this is likely going to be an outlier in terms of just like teams that finish first in both offensive and defense by this wide a margin always make the finals, and they almost always win it. And so I would love to come up here and blame the officiating or blame, but it's like most of it was they just blew it. They just didn't play well enough. And that's sobering, and I don't know, my gut reaction is just to run it back. You mentioned just everyone being a free agent plays a role in that it might just not be feasible. In the CBA, is there even going to be a season? I would guess so, but like, that's going to be a dogfight. This was the one to get. Maybe Vegas will just end up rolling. I feel like if the Lynx were healthy and playing like they were even a couple months ago, you would really like your chance. Like, the title was wide open. They weren't able to get it done. I wonder if Fee was never really fully healthy back from her injury. Alana Smith certainly was playing like an injured player. The inconsistencies of Courtney Williams' games kind of showed up in the worst times and the best times, because she was awesome in the first game of the Phoenix series. So, yeah, I don't know what they do. Like I said, my gut reaction would be you were the best team in the WNBA. You should try your best to retain that team. But also, I don't know how to square that with what happened in the postseason. I really don't. And if someone wants to try to explain it, good luck.
Yeah, it's super unfortunate. We'll see. You know, there's going to be a long time before the Lynx start up again. You know, they have a longer offseason than they did last season, obviously losing the second round. But with the chapter closing, it opens up another chapter. And as Ryan mentioned, we have, as we're recording today on Monday, The Wolves had their media day, as well as most of the other NBA teams as well, too. And with media day, we get to start thinking about all the what ifs, but in the other sense, what if the Wolves outplay expectations of Vegas or, you know, talking heads? And Ryan was able to attend in person at media day today and was able to chat, you know, ask questions, talk to some people, behind the scenes type of stuff. So I'm really excited to hear, Ryan, you know, what was your experience like at media day, and what were some of the themes that you heard from, you know, from the coaches, the front office, and the players?
Yeah, it's a good time out at media day. It's always kind of like everything. To me, a lot of what gets said gets taken with a grain of salt, especially when you're talking about, oh, this player's in the best shape of their life. They've done this in the summer. And no reason to not believe everything people say, but like Josh Minot was someone that last summer was pointed at as had a great summer, and he ended up not having a great season. So it's always interesting to start with this stuff and to try to parse out like what makes sense. But it's always good to just be in the building and get to talk to people about how they feel about the team, both on the record and kind of behind the scenes as well, like you said. But yeah, I kind of listed out some of the main talking points that I felt like were important or were a theme throughout the day. The first one I put down is this was a summer of continuity for the Wolves. They retained 7 of their top 8 players. Obviously, Nikhil leaves in the offseason, but everyone's back. And that's all well and good. Alan Horton, who we should mention, will be joining Jim Pete for when Grady is not doing the Wolves games. Alan will be doing the television broadcast with Jim Pete. Both of those guys were there today. He tweeted out a stat that the Wolves started 17-4 two seasons ago, and they finished 17-4 this last year. And so that's like a nice little carryover of the last time the Wolves retained this much talent.
That's pretty cool.
They went on this run, so kind of hoping for that again. But yeah, the other point of it was just like they had a lot of guys in the gym all summer, especially like the trio of Ant, Jaden, and Nas. Those guys were in this gym together a lot. Jalen Clark mentioned that he was there as well, and there was a point in the summer where naturally, I think it was during Ant's China trip, and Nas went back to New York, and Jaden was somewhere else, and he went off to California, but it felt like they would all come back and really get in the gym together. I came away just feeling like, I think it's always been a talking point, like the continuity, but I just got a real sense that they feel like a lot of the things that plagued them last year are not going to plague them this year in the regular season. And I think that's what we all hope for, that the playoff sample size, especially short of the Western Conference Finals, is what we see from this team. What I know you listened in to as much as you could of media day. What was your sense in terms of continuity from what you heard?
Yeah, that seemed to be the buzzword. It was said in a couple other pods. I know I listened to a couple of Dane's pods, and they talked about continuity, and that was brought up as well during the questioning, as you could say. And it was really interesting to hear about like the continuity part of it, because there's so many different senses that you could talk about continuity in this. One of the things that I heard from Mike Conley during his presser was he talked about, you know, all the trash talking that was going on during like the summer runs. You know, they were getting each other's faces and really getting into it. And, you know, that's a lot of where it starts. I mean, Ant kind of echoed that, is that when they played these 505 runs during the summer, I mean, that's, you know, that camaraderie, I mean, that's what's starting during the offseason, like camaraderie and building a team chemistry. He said that, you know, that doesn't start from the All-Star break or after. That doesn't start during preseason. That should be starting in the offseason. So he's really kind of taking that to task and to put into action. Mike Conley also talked about, this is one of his first summers in a while that he had a normal off-season of preparation. He said that it felt like a breath of fresh air, that he could shoot a basketball. Again, maybe he was being a little hyperbolic in it, but it was kind of interesting to hear that. I mean, maybe Mike was a little bit more banged up than we remember after their 2024 run. And it was good to hear that. And I think when I think the most about continuity, I do think about like the chemistry piece of it. And so this is kind of my little rant about it, is that Ant, Nas, and Jaden were all asked about their brotherhood, you know, the three of them being, you know, quote unquote, like that young core that's still now still young. They kind of all laughed about it. It's like, yeah, I'm still young, but it's like, no, they're not the young guys anymore now. But that they're super confident as a group. They're confident in knowing who they are as individuals. They're confident in knowing how to play with each other as teammates, and they're confident in what they could do because they've seen themselves go to two straight conference finals. And, you know, when Ant was asked about, you know, how's that going to help with the chemistry on the court in the beginning of the season, he said, it's like a cheat code. You know, while other teams are figuring out whether it's Rockets or even the Nuggets or, you know, whether other maybe any team other than maybe the Thunder, they're going to take some time kind of figuring out the chemistry with their new starters and new pieces. And the Wolves aren't. They're going to know what they are. They're going to be ready to go. It's like a cheat code. And so to me, honestly, Ryan, I feel like with brotherhood and like chemistry and friendship, I think friendship is the new super team. Like, it's been talked about. I think I mentioned it before in a pod a year ago, but is that like, having a team that really gets together seems more important than ever now, because like the talent is so high. You're not, every team's going to have a big that could shoot a little bit. Every team's going to have a drop big, probably. Every team's going to have, you know, all their guards can shoot threes. You know, all their forwards can shoot threes. So there's a lot of talent that's kind of diluting out. Again, obviously you still have like your Jokic's and your Giannis's and your Ants that are kind of the outliers, but the average player is so good that I think that friendship and chemistry is like that next thing. I mean, you saw it this year with the Thunder. They were super tight as a team. You always saw their, in my opinion, a little cringy, like their barking that they all did all the time. Like, all right, whatever. But, you know, they were super tight. You could tell. The year before the Celtics, when they won, right, the Celtics, how long has that team been together, right, with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum? And they've really been working and building that over the years. You kind of date that back. The last team to kind of win by throwing a team together was probably the LeBron Lakers in that bubble season in 2020, where LeBron was in his second year on the Lakers, or AD, yeah, was only there for like a year or two. They kind of threw that together. They made it work. The year before that was the Kawhi Raptors, right? And so it's like those are teams that just kind of came together, you know, flash in the pan. While now it feels like it's that continuity. Every team that's won has had to build their way up and lose multiple, whether it's conference finals or you know, early exits in the playoffs before they kind of got to where they are now. And so I think they only got there because they kind of bet on friendship and bet on brotherhood. And that's what was really exciting for me.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Yeah, Ant was the main proponent of that. He just kind of talked about it after being asked about making the West Finals and earning a gold medal, just what he's learned about like winning basketball games. And he mentioned, just like you, exactly like you said, like the teams that are together, we're going to win. And I'm always, don't always need to play devil's advocate, but I feel like that's one thing. It's like, it's not the only way to win. I think having immense talent is something that can overcome, maybe not necessarily liking
sure.
your teammates, but there aren't really any teams that have like a gigantic talent advantage. I think like the first team you'd think about is Oklahoma City. And I honestly don't think they're that much more talented than the other team. The reason that they're so much better than everyone else is because of their scheme and because of the stuff that we're talking about here, that they get along, they plan a string, all that stuff. I think that'll be really important for the Wolves. It's hard to quantify in terms of like numbers or what it provides you. But I do think that it's easier to overcome adversity when you feel like people got your back and stuff like that. So it's good. And it's not just those three guys. It's really everyone else on the team. I don't think there's any people that like butt heads on this current roster. I think a lot, what's been really important is so many people seem to understand their role on the team, both on the court, off the court, all that stuff. There kind of was last year. I think people needed to, especially probably the top players, needed to find their role, needed to find what was best. There was some positional overlap with Nikhil and Dante that obviously is not here anymore. As much as we love Nikhil and would like to have him on this roster, it does, his departure just kind of solve a little bit of that wing guard backlog. But the other part of the continuity that you mentioned is, and Mike is the poster child for this, is so many people just had a normal summer. They had right. just yep. the entire summer off to work on their games, or just relax or do whatever they needed to do. Mike was injured last offseason, and this offseason was not that. He was able to hit a hole in one instead of
best day of his life, as he said.
Apparently. Dante mentioned, and obviously Julius fits into this boat too, if they didn't have to. He said, a year ago today, I was on a flight here. And that was the biggest thing, is Tim said something, and he's, I think they said this before kind of in their offseason exit interviews, or maybe it was at the draft, that I think they admitted that they underestimated, especially the timing of the trade, how it would put people's lives, at least in the short term, kind of on the upheaval. And he said that if you can't figure out your own personal life, it's going to make it nearly impossible to have success on the court. And so for Julius and Dante, those guys are going to have great seasons. Guys like Ant and Rudy didn't play internationally, and both of those guys, Ant the last 2 years, and I think Rudy thought it was 4 or 5 years that Rudy had played in some sort of French competition during the offseason. Those guys had clean runways. Guys like Rob and Terrence, while didn't have anything particularly off during the offseason, but they were rookies. They had no idea what they're doing, and now they got to be in the gym as well. And Jalen Clark's kind of 2 off seasons removed from his Achilles rehab, but again, he got plenty of time off. So I just think that's something that goes under noticed, is just when guys get a free runway during an offseason. Right.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things I also want to add on the continuity and kind of brotherhood chemistry pieces, that Dante talks about it in his session, where he said that he even got to know Chris Finch a little bit more, like as a person, you know, and I think that's going to make a huge difference. He said he talked to Finch a lot, and Finch gave him a lot of instruction on what he wanted Dante to get better at and what his role really was going to be. And I think that's going to make a huge difference. Dante is like the ultimate role player, in a sense of like, he can go out there and do to the best of his ability, try and execute what you're going to ask him to do, but he's not going to go out there and, you know, just be able to be a wing it on his own. And so I think him being able to build even that chemistry with the coaching staff, a lot of players talked about that they got to talk to Finch, and Finch talked to him a little bit more during the summer about, what do I need from you this year? I think that helps. I mean, you talked about the clunky fit in the beginning. I mean, it was evident. Everyone likes to point to Julius Randle angrily throwing the ball at Rudy Gobert in that Raptors game or whatever it was, or it's like, first of all, that's just how Julius Randle passes. He just throws the ball like 100 miles an hour. But even like, you know, Ant and Julius Randle talks about each of them in media day today, that they mentioned a play where they both posted up in the same spot, and they were like, whoa, like, what are we doing, right? And so I think a lot of that miscommunication, as we saw as the season went along, was fixed, and it's only going to get better. So, you know, as far as like that chemistry piece, I think, you know, on the court, we're going to see the fruits of that labor. And one more time for the off the court part, you know, as we all know, Nasri tragically, you know, his sister was murdered just, you know, a couple weeks ago or just under a month ago. And, you know, he didn't talk about that specifically, but he did talk about Nas in his media day that, you know, when he needed people because he had something going on in the summer, that they were there for him. And I think that really means a lot. I mean, Ant is also someone, you know, we all know he lost a lot at a really young age, a lot of close family members. And, you know, it's not to say it's the same thing, because obviously the root of those causes were two vastly different things. But just them being there for each other is just like super special. I think just knowing that they have each other's back, just again, not on the basketball court, but as human beings, I think that really, really makes them want to win for and play for each other so much more than just, you know, people who are like, oh, I work with them, but that's about it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that all goes. And I've continued to believe that so much of their issues during the start of the regular season were the stuff that we've been talking about here. The poor timing of the trade, just the on-court stuff that was always going to come regardless of the timing of the trade, of just like trying to figure out everyone's roles, the contracts of... They had 3 free agents basically last offseason. I think all of that played a part. No one, Mike is the only free agent, other than like Leonard Miller is only partially guaranteed. But like of even the fringe, including just like even the fringe rotation guys, Mike's the only free agent. And Mike is not concerned about his contract. I'm almost certain that if Mike wants to play next year, the Wolves will have him back at a fair enough number for everyone involved. So Mike's not. It's different when your 30-plus-year-old veteran is the free agent, but everyone's good to go, and I think they're focused on winning. And obviously, I said they finished the season 17-4. I don't think you can just click times four and that's going to be their win total. But I do think that, like, they project to be a 50-plus win team. And the fun of the season will be, to me, is obviously crap can happen and they could not fulfill 50-plus wins. But, like, the fun of it can be, are we going to be low 50s and kind of be similar to what they were last year? And it probably is, if they're low 50s, a step behind OKC and Denver, or are we going to be in the high 50s and really be pushing for a championship, or at least a darn good shot at one? That you're not going to figure that out on media day. That's right. That's the fun of the season.
That's Rudy funny though, right? Sorry, I was going to say about the win totals. So those of you who maybe haven't been on Canis Hoopis, I do a series called Canis Pulses where I'm asking fans to kind of vote in what your season predictions are or whatever. And I swear Ryan and I are in lockstep in that I did not go back and like tell him what my win total prediction was. But I went through the votes already today, Ryan, and I saw yours. We both predicted the Wolves at 53 wins, exactly, and we both predicted them to be the number three seed, I believe is what we both put in there. So I think you and I, we're in lockstep. I mean, I think we're a believer in the continuity, and we believe it, and I swear this is not a setup. Ryan and I just happen to be thinking, I think, similar wavelengths about this.
Yeah, and that is a preliminary pick that I purposely didn't want to spend too much time on it, right? Like with your poll, like it's kind of
reaction,
a snapshot of, and I, that's just where I was at the filling it out after I finally got home on my couch. So yeah, don't hold me to it, but I mentioned just trying to fulfill, or like if they are a 55 plus win team or maybe even approaching 60 wins, the way it's going to get there is through their defense. Again, last year they were seventh, which many Wolves season, even seventh is fairly solid. And if they're seventh this year, they're going to be a playoff team and might have home court advantage. But if they want to be like the two seed or like really fighting for a championship here, I think they got to be either first or like top two in defense. And that seems like the media day consensus was similar, that at the very least defensive consistency has to be, they have to get back to what they were doing in the 2023-24 season with Kat and Rudy and all those guys.
Yeah, I think the defense is going to be really interesting to talk about. I think everyone, it was asked, and everyone either was asked it or brought it up on their own, where the personnel is not quite the same as it was in the past, right? They don't have Nikhil as a, you know, utility guy who got a lot of, you know, all defensive team votes last year. Even you look at the year before when they made the conference final, they had Kyle Anderson, who was, you know, a superb off the bench defender, mm-hmm. who was multi-positional and was just so good as a backline defender. They don't have those same guys anymore. So we're going to learn a lot about, okay, Rudy is also obviously not the same type of player he was 2 years ago when he won Defensive Player of the Year either. I mean, he's still good. He's still great on the defensive end, but, you know, how is that going to adjust? And so they always talk about, as Finch said, and, you know, they talked about this in Britt Robson's interview with Finch last week, is that what is that second unit defense going to look like? And that second unit is any unit that does not have Rudy Gobert out there. And so the Julius and Nas piece of it, they talked about in the presser about they have to be able to know how to play off each other, how to be aggressive, and, you know, where their strengths are. And yeah, we're going to learn a lot about this team for sure. Whether it's going to be good or bad, it's going to be a test.
Yeah, and I think everyone kind of I'm not sure what, like, if we put the over-under on what a successful defensive season for them would be. And I don't, like you mentioned, I don't think they have quite the defensive talent on their team that they did when they finished first in defense. Like you mentioned, Nikhil's not here. Kyle Anderson's not here. They're going to be playing Rob a lot more, and that just, they didn't have a defensive liability like that on that team. And that's probably harsh for Rob, but he's an undersized guard, and Mike is not as good a defender as he was 2 seasons ago. You mentioned Rudy. I think the Rudy lineups, I think, could definitely get back to where they were 2 seasons ago, basically one of the best defensive lineups in basketball. And what was a big theme during media day was, what can they be in the non-Rudy minutes? And that's like where you mentioned Kyle Anderson and Nikhil helped a lot. Those were two really good defensive players that were in that lineup. And I think last year the non-Rudy minutes defensively were tough, and now you don't have Nikhil for those minutes. So you're hoping for Jalen Clark will play more, Terrence Shannon will play more, and you're going to hope that you can get back to where you were. But I think one player that we mentioned, the players that aren't going to be as good as they were two seasons ago, I think one player that can have his best defensive season of his career is Jaden McDaniels. And today he basically said that, like, during the first part of the season, he just was not defending like he should. He didn't get started until, I don't remember if he gave an exact point, but, like, a little bit into the season. So I think just for everyone, Jaden especially, though, like, just so often last season, or two seasons ago, they just absolutely hounded teams. Obviously, the culmination of that is the Jamal Murray throw the heat pack game where they're just making his life hell on earth.
I still feel like they owe the Nuggets a suspension for that one.
I was calling for that. I here's my very quick tangent. I get they don't want to suspend people for the playoffs. Just have a system where, like, he's suspended for the first game of next year. I think that would have been totally fine.
Give him the Patrick Beverley treatment. So.
Yeah. But, and they last season, they found that hounding defense so rarely. And when you did, you go, well, that's the team that can, that's what we saw a couple seasons ago. And the first game that comes to mind that was brought up in media day was game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. Ant especially was incredible in that game defensively. And the next game in game 4, just didn't see it as much. So I think for everyone, just trying to find that. And Jalen Clark put it best where he said, like, they should embrace the Minnesota aspect of it, where it's like, it's cold. People don't want to be here. They'd rather be playing in Miami. So let's play like that. Make it miserable for them. And I think, like, that's just a perfect encapsulation of what I think this defense can do, is, like, make Target Center a crappy place to play.
Yeah.
Make Target Center, like, just teams dread, oh, we got to go to Minnesota in January. It's going to be cold. Jaden and Rudy are going to be up guarding me, and it's just going to be off. Like, that is what I hope that they can get back to. And whatever best version of this team is, it's going to include kind of getting back to that version of the Wolves.
Yeah. So to quote Jalen Clark exactly, he said, I want us to make it really, really hard. Pause. So he's kind of acknowledging that little innuendo there. But yeah, Jalen Clark, we'll talk about him a little bit more later too, but I really loved his media availability. If you have a chance, definitely watch it. He has kind of an Anthony Edwards-esque, like, you know, hey, I'm just going to say what I'm thinking and, like, be just really open and honest about it. I think it was Dane that asked him about, like, hey, a lot of players who are, you know, offensive-minded spent this offseason honing their skills in certain ways. And he asked Jalen, like, well, you know, how can you work on point of attack defense in the offseason? You know, how do you do that? How do you improve that? And he said, you know, a lot of work. He played a lot of one-on-one with Anthony Edwards. And obviously, anytime you're playing against one of the best offensive players in the NBA, you can have access to him to playing. He said playing one-on-ones basically every morning when they start around 7 a.m. I mean, that was a hell of a way to wake up in the morning, is to get, you know, try not to get fried by Ant. But he did say that setting point of attack defense is, you know, tough, because in this league, it seems like they give so much leeway for players to push off with their off hands. And he's like, I'm not going to name no names, but there's some players that you just can't even touch. And we all know who he's talking about, recent finals MVP. But it was kind of entertaining to hear him talk about that. But he also talks about how he studies a lot of defensive backs, a lot of quarterbacks in football, which he's like, I know it sounds kind of weird, but he studies about how they use their hips and how he studies routes, how to cut off angles. I thought that was a really, really kind of unique answer, and just kind of provides a little bit of insight when you think about how does Jalen Clark steal the ball so much off inbounds or in the backcourt, or, you know, jumping passing lanes, because he studies this. And so I really hope, and he seems to really understand, like, you know, he has a path to play if he can hit a respectable clip, but also play really locked down defense. You talked about Jaden McDaniels as well, too. Happy belated birthday. By the time you're hearing this, his birthday was yesterday, which, by the way, Ryan, did you know Jaden McDaniels is the same birthday as Kevin Durant? I did not know that.
Did not know that.
Yeah, that's a lot of wingspan on one day there. They're separated by 12 years, I believe, exactly. Jaden was also talked about by Chris Finch, in that he hopes that Jaden is personally motivated by not getting any of those, making those all defensive teams, which is a little bit wild. If you recall, 2 years ago, when the Wolves were, you know, that top defensive team. Jaden was second all defensive team. And this year, this last year, he didn't make any of the team. So again, really hoping that he locks in on that. And he seems to understand, like, you know, if he continues growing, he started rebounding and playing defense a lot better and upped his offense in the playoffs like we're used to. I'm really excited to see where they could go defensively, because yes, it is a little bit scary not having a Nikhil or Kyle Anderson off the bench, but there's a lot of growth potential, you know, if you use kind of that asset mindset type of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's less about like what the hard number is that they finished defensive rating wise, but just like getting back to being like, we are a defensive team. We're gonna play defense almost every night, like it's a playoff game.
Right.
I think that combined with the defensive talent they do still have should make them a much better team than they were last year. And if they can keep that offensive rating around in the top 10, then you're looking at a really strong team heading into the playoffs. But the last kind of main topic I thought of in Media Day was just the conversation around the young guys. And it started with Tim Connelly just talking about Rob, TJ, and Clark as kind of the main three guys, young guys that we're going to play. And they need to see consistency from them. All three of those guys have shown flashes to different degrees, or all of them have played a small role last year, but they're going to need to see consistency to get them where they need to go. And the last kind of person that was mentioned was there's a lot of buzz, both just what they said on Media Day and behind the scenes with Berenger. I will mention that Connelly specifically mentioned Rob, TJ, and Clark as guys that will play this year. And Berenger was mentioned in a kind of a different light, which is fine. But I am as high as anyone else on Berenger for next year, the year after, all that. And maybe there's a role for him later down the season, or even midway through the season. I don't know. But I don't think he's going to be playing, certainly not on night one.
Yeah, it's a lot of people like to get up for the buzz for Berenger, and like, I'm all for it. I mean, get excited. That's okay. Now is the time to be super excited about it. But when he's played, you know, the same amount, if not less, of what Rob Dillingham to start the year, like, don't get too worked up over it. It's a long timeline, and I think there's opportunity for him. Jim, you know, talked about it in our pod last week that kind of made the rounds, was mentioned on a couple, you know, radio stations, I think. Was kind of re-aggregated there, where he feels like Berenger's ready to play now. And, like, we'll see. I mean, obviously, there's no rush to get him in right now. We don't have a gaping hole at center right there. But at the same time, it's okay to get excited, but also understand he might not be playing a lot. I believe that they also mentioned that he wasn't going to be spending, what was it, like, not a ton of time in Iowa. He'll kind of be kind of going back and forth. He'll be getting time with the Wolves, but also, you know, getting some time over there as well, too. So I think it'll be a mix. I don't think he's going to be strictly put all the way into Iowa, where we're just kind of going to be banished and never see him over there. I believe it was Connelly or Finch I was talking about how he wants to see Berenger in practice against Rudy, you know, and being able to work those matchups as well too. So yeah.
The other young guy that we've already talked a lot about him, but I was just so impressed by Jalen Clark's interview basically the whole time. He kind of, the first piece, like, asking how he can get more minutes or what his role is going to be. And he's just like, if I can shoot 40% from three and guard the best player, I think they're going to have to keep playing me. And it's like, yeah, pretty much. That sounds great. That's the definition of a 40% or a definition of a 3-and-D player. And I think last year, that was one of my bigger surprises right away, was his shot going in. I was kind of expecting him to be a net negative there. And you're not asking him to take step back threes, and he said as much, like, they're not going to be expecting me to hit those shots. But he just seems so dialed in on what they are looking for him to do, especially this season. And I'm sure he'll try to grow in X, Y, and Z area, but like, he just seems so locked in on, this is my role, this is where I'm going to get minutes, this is what I do best. He even mentioned summer league, like, not going the best because he tried to kind of expand that role, which is probably a good thing to do in
That's
summer
the
league.
Place to do it. Yeah.
But like, I think he's dialed in when he's got like other talented people around him, both offensive and defensively. I think that's where Jalen Clark can really shine. And it's impressive that they're getting this much value on the court from a player that they did not spend very much draft capital acquiring.
Yeah. I say this in that, with the utmost respect to all the other players on the roster, is that I feel like Jalen Clark is the Timberwolves player who is most comfortable with his role on the entire team. I mean, if it's not Jalen Clark, it might be Ant, because everyone else is
kind of
like,
Ant.
Okay.
Just like Ant, score 50 points. That's my role. Thank you.
Right. And so, because Jalen Clark talks about it, it's like, hey, look, if I get back cut, I'm probably going to get benched. Like, I can't allow myself to get back cut. Like, he knows. Like, those are like the small little things, right? And he did talk about when he was running with, the Wolves in pickup over summer, that like he learned, like, I became excellent at cutting off the ball, and players are looking for me because they know that that's what my role is. That's what I'm going to be doing. And so he seems to really understand it. And again, just his self-awareness, I think, is really, really good. And he's, you know, continuing to say that, like, I can't just be satisfied with doing the bare minimum. Like, he has to continue to, you know, not get knocked down and kind of get sent back to the bench. And so he's still hungry for his role. He says, like, you know, oh, I'm not expecting myself to get a ton of minutes. Like, it's a new season. I got to start all over again. You know, last season doesn't mean anything. I got to do it again this year. And so I'm really excited to see kind of where he goes. And in Jalen's own words, he looked huge. He looked like he's been working out. He's got muscle watch going on. He is a strong looking young man. And again, it's just funny, I'll never forget, I think it was Ant that was talking about, Malik Monk, I think he says, after a Kings game, where Malik was like, man, like, why'd you guys take that who's that big buff guy, you know, why'd you guys take him off me? that dude was harassing me, you know. I think that, like, that's that type of effect that Jalen Clark has, where it's just like, gosh, like, you know, he's just so physical, aggressive, and really smart about the way that he plays. So yeah, I'm excited for him as well too.
Yeah, and I already mentioned him, but I really enjoyed his interview. We mentioned earlier, but like his stuff with the defensive backs in football, and what I think really translates well there is, like, he mentioned playing one-on-one with Ant, and if you're going to oversell, he knows if Ant goes left, he's going to try to get to the step back. So if I try to, well, if I just overplay that, he'll just dribble right around me and score. And so he's like, I kind of understand, like, similar to a defensive back in football, where if a receiver's running and he goes past a certain yard marker, you can take out a certain number of routes out of whatever theoretical route tree is. And that's kind of similar to basketball, where if he knows if Ant's going left, he could theoretically do a couple things. If he's going right, maybe different things get put in. So it's really interesting to see the comparisons there. And like you said, I'm excited to see what Clark can do, and hopefully they can ramp up that, and I would expect it, ramp up the rotation to 10 guys, because I would guess Clark is the 10th, because I would imagine Rob and TJ, not in terms of who's better or worse, but like just needing to find minutes for those guys, Clark will probably be the 10th. But speaking of Rob, a lot of discussion on Rob Dillingham. I think he's the biggest swing player on the Wolves in terms of Jalen Clark, like you mentioned, might be the smallest window between good and bad in terms of, I think you can probably, actually with Jace, I said, I pinpointed this as Dante. Like, if you're putting confidence values on your projection site, like, Dante's pretty high, Clark's pretty high. Rob would be pretty low in terms of what confidence you have on the good or bad. Both extremes seem possible, and that was a big kind of talking point today. But I think Rob was another person that seemingly was here all summer. Finch and Conley, Tim Connolly talked about what they want to see from Rob, just in terms of consistency and defensive effort that has been there, but will continue to need to be there, along with just more know-how on the defensive end. And then getting put under Mike Connolly's wing, I think will be great for Rob. And I think it's fair to be worried about his development and what you paid to get him and all that. But I also just kind of, like, I think he's 20 years old. Like, what were we doing at 20? I was sitting on my college couch.
Right, exactly.
Doing nothing. Like, and it's not to say, I feel like that's what the money's for. You got to be a good player by 2021. And that's what Rob will be tasked with to do. But I just think if any position type is going to be slow to kind of get into value in terms of player, it's going to be a 19, 20-year-old point guard. So,
yeah.
But it'll be a big year for Rob. If he's has another year like last year where he's in and out of the rotation, it's going to be worrying. And if he kind of has the run Terrence Shannon had more down the stretch of last season, I think that'll be really encouraging.
Yeah, Finch talked about in his media availability when asked about Rob is that, you know, it's not so much a defense that they're, you know, they were encouraged by his defense, like you said, but they were a little bit more, I don't say concerned, but wanting to press and push Rob to get better at his playmaking. Like, he has such speed and skill and handles to be able to get into the paint and get paint touches and, you know, spread it out. And so that's something that they really want him to focus on. And, you know, we saw a little bit of that during Summer League. It's still, you know, I don't know if it's enough to sell me yet, but Mike Conley was asked about Rob as well too, because a lot has been made about their relationship and their chemistry, you know, being able to mentor him. And, you know, who better to get mentored in, you know, the entire NBA, if you could choose anyone to mentor a small point guard to help him work on his playmaking, than it is Mike Conley, you know, if not maybe Chris Paul. It's like, those are probably the top two guys that you would want Rob to have to learn from in terms of, like, increasing your playmaking at your size. And so Mike did talk a little bit more about Rob's preparation this summer, about how much time that they spent together. He mentioned that Rob was asking a ton of questions when they were working together, and that he was super, super encouraged by the types of questions, but also his hunger for the opportunity. He just kept saying he's like super ready. Like, he really wants this. He really wants it. And when Rob was, you know, asked about, you know, how do you feel coming into year two now, he talked a little bit about his confidence, and you alluded to it, where he said last year he was a little bit rattled coming in, not getting the minutes that he thought maybe he was going to play, or other players that were drafted even behind him played more minutes than he did. That did rattle him a little bit. He wasn't exactly sure about, like, oh, you know, I never played with this many good players before. He literally said that in his presser today. And it's like you said, if you could, any of you listeners, think back to when you were 19, 20, and think about, like, what you were doing maybe during your first year of college or your first year at, like, a job or whatever, right? I know for me, my first year in college, I was, like, doing a different hairstyle. I was wearing different clothes. I was going out and, like, partying with all these frat guys, which is, like, definitely not something I normally do. But I was, like, exploring. I was trying to learn about myself, and I felt super, I don't know if you want to say insecure, but definitely not confident in myself and kind of who it was. It took me that kind of trial and error to learn, to kind of get humble, like, all right, you know what? This is not my scene. I kind of found out who I was. I ended up, you know, working in the dorms and, you know, doing different things, finding jobs on campus. And that kind of became my niche. And, you know, my second, third, and fourth year was so much more smooth, because I finally felt comfortable being like, you know what? I don't have to go out and do these things or dress a certain way that I don't want to anymore. And so I think it's the same thing for Rob, which, yes, again, he's 20 years old. He's getting paid millions of dollars. Yes. But at the same time, like, he is learning. I think that's natural. You can't expect that just to happen in 1 year. Not everyone's Anthony Edwards, so they come in, they're just super confident and able to pull off the things that other players just can't do at that age. So yeah, I am, like, cautiously optimistic. You know, I feel you, Ryan, in that, like, you know, I'm not the most confident in Rob, you know, turning into his best case scenario, but, you know, we'll see. He's definitely gonna have the opportunity. I think Finch and Conley are on the same page about it. They, I feel like, intentionally did not go out and sign a, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, or a, you know, pick up a Jordan Clarkson, or someone else like that on the fringes to come in and, you know, potentially take minutes. Where it's like, no, Rob, like, you're gonna have to do it. You're the only other, you know, one of one point guards out there. I mean, sure, yes, Ant can play some, you know, duties. Dante can play some duties there, but really, it's got to be Rob who's the other only listed point guard on the roster.
Yeah, I guess the last person that is probably point guard is Bones Highland, but that's kind of the type of player. Bones even said it during his, like, he knows he's not really going to play very much on this team, and so that's different from, like, a Brogdon type, where I think the goal for that type of player is to have a great season and get back onto the market where they can get a better contract than they're at, where I think Bones is at a different point in his career. So that, similar to, like, Luka Garza, where, well, up until now, where it's like he was good for his role, he was good at kind of coming off the bench when he needed to, but now that he's in a point in his career where he's trying to earn a better contract, he's kind of gone from the Bones type to the Malcolm Brogdon type. Like, he needs to spread his wings, and so that's kind of where the Bones make sense of it all. And that, you mentioned, like, Ant will have the ball a lot, Julius will have the ball a lot, Dante can play a little point guard. Like, I think they feel they don't need a true point guard out there at all times. And Mike, and the combination of Mike and Rob for when you're looking for a more traditional point guard, will be enough.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of young guys to see. Funny enough, in that same poll that I referenced earlier in this episode, you and I voted the same. Is that the storyline on the court? One of the questions is, what storyline on the court are you most excited to follow? And one was the opportunity for the second core of young guys to play. And you and I answered the same on that as well, too. So I think I'm going to be really, really tuned into that. I'm one of those sickos, so I'll be really tuned into the Iowa Wolves as well, too. So I will provide occasional Rocco Zakarski updates and Tristan Newton updates for you. And Enrique Freeman, also not to be forgotten as well, too. Unfortunately, the three of them were not at media day today. I don't know if it's right, if it's normal for two-way guys to be there. But I'm excited, even as young as you can get. All right, that sounds out of context. The young players they have, no matter what team they're playing for, I'm excited about.
Yeah. All right, I see you in our sheet here, you put some random notes, just kind of fun thing from media day. What stood out to you as
in terms of fun? I'm going to fire off a couple of these random notes. Yeah, so those of you, again, who don't want to spend the hour to kind of listen to all of them. Ant was asked, is there a player that he really misses playing with or having on the team, on the court and off the court? And he mentioned two guys I did not expect to mention. He mentioned Jared Vanderbilt, and he mentioned Josh Okogie, which they just overlapped just briefly a little bit in their time together. It's just funny because they're two on-the-court very similar type of archetypes in a sense where they're like, all gas, no breaks, like defensive players, which very, very limited offensive abilities. But he just said that he really misses those two, specifically Vando. Vando is still out, I believe, in Los Angeles toiling away right now. He's unfortunately had to deal with a lot of injuries, but that was interesting. Another thing that I also heard was Bones Highland said that Tim Connelly listened to him rap. I think it was like before the draft or like shortly after the draft. I only learned about Bones Highland was like a self-made rapper when he posted something on his story recently, and it was a song that said it was like by Busy Bones, and it was like a rap song playing in the background of that story. And I'm like, wait, is that like Busy Bones as in Bones Highland? And in fact, it was. So Bones does rap. It'd be funny to see if him and Ant's brother does a little collab together or something like that. That would be kind of funny. Two more here is that Jalen did go live on Instagram during the photo shoot where they're on the court. I don't know, Ryan, did you see this by any chance?
I did see a little bit of the clip, yeah.
Yeah, so Jalen is live and he's recording from his phone. And I think, I don't know if he bet Rob Dillingham or whatever, but he's like challenging Rob to shoot like these corner threes from out of bounds, like, you know, like Steph Curry does in his warmups. And then Rob's like, man, like this is cash, like this is money, this is my money. And he like breaks it pretty bad. And then Jalen just keeps like talking trash to him the whole time. He's like, oh, that's way off, that's way off. And I think Rob missed like three or four in a row, which is, again, some people are like going too far with it. We're like, oh my God, Rob's not ready. Where it's like, dude, they're like messing around in a photo shoot. I don't think this is like prime Rob's like jump shot ability there, but that was kind of funny. And the last one, Ant was asked about his trip to China during the summer to promote his Adidas new release of his AE2s that were out. And he said there was a fan that gave him this traditional Chinese opera mask, and it was made completely out of parts from his second signature shoe, the AE2s. And he said that like that was probably the coolest thing ever, and he's gonna wear that to the first game. He's like, I don't even know how he made that. The shoes have been out for like 7 hours, and he somehow already kind of made this up. You know, I don't know how that happened, but that was pretty cool to kind of see him shout out China and said that how much love he got overseas there. As someone that I've been to Taiwan a couple of times, I have seen huge Anthony Edwards like bulletin boards like towering over on these skyscrapers. So I know that Asia loves them. They're Anthony Edwards. I myself love myself some Anthony Edwards. But those are some cool little random notes. Is there anything else, Ryan, that you saw or you heard that maybe wasn't on any of the pressers or anything like that?
Yeah, I think the Joe Ingles stuff is always fun. So many little interactions you have with them. Basically, anytime the media walks by him into the locker room or wherever, he'll just go, fuck the media. obviously kidding.
He's not talking about you, Ryan. It's not you.
Well, actually, one time he looks at me and goes, and you in particular, and points at me. So,
oh, man.
Wrong. Yeah, so maybe a tinge of truth, maybe not. Obviously.
What'd you do to him?
I don't know. I usually keep to myself. I'm not trying to stand out in the middle of their locker room.
Yeah, he saw the quiet one. He bullied him.
I get that is probably true. It's you pick on the little guy, but
that's right.
Yeah, he walks in, and I just knew it was going to be. So he walks in, he looks at John Krasinski, and calls him little fella. How you doing, little fella? And then he goes to Chris Hine. He's like, oh, I don't know if Chris sent his book, his Ant book, and he said, well, why don't you write a book about me? And then he said something like, well, I don't even want to be here.
That's funny.
So just immediate classic Joe Ingles stuff. Fun cover, and he did talk about his deciding to come back. I believe his family's still in Orlando. because of the school system down there, and that's been tough, but they all of them made the decision collectively, obviously, for him to return. And he's another player that I, other than inbounds, I don't, I think he knows he's not going to play much, but I think he's a little bit of a Rudy whisperer. I think they like that they have a good relationship, and he can kind of talk to Rudy and be on Rudy's side, which hasn't always, he even mentioned Rudy hasn't always had a lot of teammates that are, they're on his side. And I think he tells people like it is without just being a total dick about it. Like, I think he can level people and tell them what they need to do, what they're not doing, all that stuff. So I think a lot of us were surprised when they took on Joe Ingles again, but just having him up there and knowing that they already have, like we mentioned, 10 guys that want to be in the rotation, and even another couple that you wouldn't feel the worst if they played spot minutes here and there. It makes sense to me why they would welcome Ingles back.
Yeah, I would read a book about Joe Ingles. I feel like he's a man that has a lot of stories to tell, but if not only just for the mystery of it, but I know he played overseas with Ricky Rubio before both of them came to the NBA back in the day. So just for those stories, I'd want to tune in for sure. But a little factoid, in case you didn't know, at one point, you talk about, you know, Rudy maybe doesn't have a ton of people in his camp or in his corner all the time, but did you know that Rudy Gobert's best friend on the team a couple seasons ago was Matt Ryan? That was a relationship. That was a relationship that was there. So that was kind of funny.
I was not covering the team in the capacity that I do now. So that that relationship that eluded me, I guess.
He's Joe Ingles is the new Ryan Kelly. Or not Ryan Kelly. Whoa, Ryan that's a real throwback. Now Matt Ryan.
Yeah, and not Atlanta not former Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan. Yeah. But yeah, any other lingering media day takes that you got, or just what else you got, Leo?
No, I'm just excited to see some of the flicks, some of the videos, because I will get, even at the age of my mid-late 30s here, unreasonably hyped for the hype montages and little videos of them, especially once they're wearing those black tree jerseys. I saw one little clip of Naz Reid with a headband. Naz Reid had a headband. That was the thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Naz Reid wearing the black throwbacks with the black t-shirt on it, you know, with the old court on it. I'm gonna get so hyped on that. Like, that is a way for me to, like, spend my money recklessly on some things I probably do not need to be buying. Like, Mitchell and Ness is going to put out some jacket or some hat. I mean, yeah. I need that. I need that this year. I'm excited to see kind of how those turn out. I think the Wolves PR team and marketing team has done a really good job rolling a lot of that content out there. I'm not going to say anything about Kevin Garnett or jersey retirements yet, because, you know, I don't want to jinx anything. But, you know, if that does happen, I'm really excited to see kind of how they roll that out as well.
Yeah, I will say what's interesting is, so they're wearing the black tree jerseys in the court 21 times at home this season, and that's a number that's important to, obviously, the aforementioned KG. That seems like either just a total coincidence or the opposite of a coincidence. But I will finish out this pod with our two words, as we always do. Mine is, it's here. We'll use the contraction to make it two words. Media day today, like we said, and the first preseason game is on Saturday against the Nuggets in San Diego. So it's here. We got a total of 6 preseason games, somehow a preseason back-to-back. So for you sickos out there, Friday, October 17th, second night of a preseason back-to-back in Philly. Whew, I don't know about what the basketball looked like there, but we got 2 at Target Center. It all starts Saturday, and then in about 2.5 weeks, we get our first regular season game out in Portland.
Yeah, that second back-to-back game, that is like my shit right there. Because we're going to see Yoan Berenguer probably get a double-double.
Lenny Miller.
Yeah, we're gonna see some Jules Bernard. We're going to see some Alize Johnson out there. I mean, this is a former Korean League champion.
Johnny Juzang.
Johnny Juzang. Dude, don't even. If Johnny Juzang makes the team, I am buying a black Johnny Juzang number. He can't take 33 because that's Leonard Miller, and he can't take 3 because that's JD. So we'll see what number he gets. But I'm pumped for it. I'm excited for preseason. That brings me to my two words, which is get hyped. I'm already getting hyped right now just talking about it. Whether it's a gorgeous throwback courts, like I mentioned, whether it's Rob in the sick black tree jerseys with a bunch of, you know, drip on him, a bunch of just, you know, all his chains on, whether it's Ant gunning for career highs against tanking teams, which is allegedly what he's going to be shooting for nowadays in this season, or even Nas, like I said, Nas in the headband. Like, any of those, like, it's about to be a movie, baby, in the eternal words of Karl-Anthony Towns. It's about to be a movie.
Yeah, should be fun. Like we kind of mentioned, Link season ends, unfortunately. But
Ryan, why you gotta go there?
we get the Timberwolves to kind of distract us from the the end of that. But yeah, for Leo and Ryan, thanks to everyone for listening. I got a very special guest coming in the second half of this week. But sometime after that Saturday. Preseason game, Leo and I will be on to break it all down. But yeah, for Leo, I'm Ryan. Thank you everyone for listening.
Get home and drive safe.
Go Wolves.